Blog Talk Radio.
So you want your charity to succeed. It's no secret that combining online and offline techniques is the key to modern-day fundraising success, and practical advice is what you need. The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart is the perfect place to learn from experts around the world who, along with our host, provide advice you can use. Ted Hart is without a doubt one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. Also a successful author, his books cover a broad range of topics from major gift fundraising to use of social media and how to succeed online. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. From the latest in charity news, technology, fundraising, and social networking, Ted and his guests help you maneuver through this economic downturn in the charitable sector to greater levels of efficiency and fundraising success. Remember, this is a live call-in show. Become part of the show by adding your voice. Call now at 347-324-3080. After the show, you can find all our podcasts at tedhart.com. Just click on radio links. Don't forget to dial 347-324-3080. Now, welcome the host of the Nonprofit Coach, Ted Hart.
And welcome here to the Nonprofit Coach. Great to have you all here live with us, coming to you live from the nation's capital. Today is September 13th, and as always here on the Nonprofit Coach, we start the show with Page One News. Now, for those of you who might be new here to the Nonprofit Coach, Page One News means that we have news links available for you over at tedhart.com. Click on radio links so you can follow along with me. Don't forget, when we get to Page Two, which is our Page Two Expert, that is the live call-in show portion of today. And as the announcer said, you can join us live by dialing 347-324-3080. Press the number 1 to raise your hand here on the switchboard to let me know that you would like to ask a question. First up here in the radio links on the Nonprofit Coach comes to us from businessinsider.com. Over on businessinsider.com, you'll find 23 things great brands do in social media. These are very practical tips, things that you can do and things that you need to keep in mind as you are starting to move towards integrating social media into the culture of your organization. Read all about it over at tedhart.com. Click on radio links. Next up in the radio links today is really, again, very practical advice. This one coming to us from the American Express Open Forum. Over on American Express Open Forum, you will find email newsletters, best practices for small businesses. Well, this gives you very practical advice on best time of day to send out your e-newsletter, best wording, best unsubscribe etiquette, so that let's make sure we keep the etiquette correct here online, and best ethics. As a nonprofit sector, we want to make sure that we are upholding the very best ethics in the use of our online resources. Now, next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, as we regularly do, we have a number of good friends and guests here on the Nonprofit Coach and Page One who have announcements, who have important information that they would like to share with you. And today, one of our very good friends of the Nonprofit Coach from the very earliest days of our show is Kendall Webb, who is CEO of Just Give. As you know, here on the show, we've been suggesting that for small nonprofits, Just Give is an excellent way for you to get into the option of offering online giving because they've already created a page for you. Well, live here today on the show is Kendall Webb. Welcome here to the Nonprofit Coach, Kendall.
Hello, Ted. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you back here on the show, as always. But I do understand that there are a number of changes that are coming to Just Give, and you wanted to come on the show and share those with our listeners. Today in the radio links, we have provided a direct link to justgive.org so that our listeners can go directly there. When they get there, what changes and what things are happening over at Just Give?
Oh, thanks for giving me the chance to talk about these. So as a nonprofit organization ourselves, we've been working very hard to send as much of every donation directly to all the nonprofits that we work with through our donors and through our nonprofit resources. Our fee has been 3% for the last 10 years, one of the lowest out there, and we've kept it the same for 10 years, and we've been breaking even on our transaction costs, and our board has generously been subsidizing the other costs outside the transaction costs for donors to give, such as check distribution costs and tech costs and customer service. However, over the 10 years...
Which is great, but there's a life expectancy to that sort of generosity given this this kind of market. So what's the future rates going to be?
Right. So over the 10 years when the banking and transaction fees to us have been slowly increasing, we've absorbed those expenses, knowing the importance of keeping costs low. But a decade later, when we looked at our long-term life as Just Give, we realized that we needed to increase our fee to 4.5% to cover these increasing costs. And what I really want to emphasize is that we made this high. We had long discussions about whether to make it a very small increase just to break even or continue to subsidize for a long time. And we decided to make this jump very consciously, because we didn't want to show price volatility and every few years increase our price. So we have this price as something that we are set to keep for hopefully another decade, and we're dedicated to being stable and, you know, not an unpredictable price volatile site like some of the other folks in our sector who may change every year or two. So we've picked a price that would work long term. We really looked at this decision, and we realized how we could make it the best for nonprofits as well, because we're very conscious that a price increase...
Kendall, how does this new rate compare to services like Network for Good?
Network for Good raised their price again to 5% now. So we still stayed lower. We're trying to always be the lowest that we can be, staying also stable for many years. So there's an example where we are very consciously trying to save nonprofits as much as they can. Even, you know, 0.5% we've heard from all of our nonprofits goes such a long way over their donation collections over the year.
So and, what other changes are coming quickly to Just Give in light of this price fair? And, of course, as you're pointing out, you're still remaining the lowest of this kind of service for nonprofits in the marketplace.
Great. Yeah, so what we are going to do is we realize, too, that with this we can spend a lot more resources enhancing our programs and innovating new ways for donors to give, so that way we won't be focusing on fundraising. We want to be focused on the things that really leverage our platform to bring more money to nonprofits. So we, for example, this month have launched a new customized memorial giving area to make it easier for individuals to ask for donations in lieu of flowers for specific causes. So this will bring new funding, which is always our core mission, to bring new funding. We're also developing a mobile application that will encourage donors to give on their mobile devices when they're not at their desk, which is becoming a new important thing for people. So if they're in an event or watching an emotional ask on TV or a movie or a concert, we just had a Dave Matthews concert where he gave an emotional ask. And
all charities who use the Just Give site will have mobile giving opportunities using the Just Give service?
Exactly, exactly. So they'll be able
when
to
leverage that. Launch, Kendall, when will that
That's
launch?
That's going to launch in about 3 months.
And
it's already being tested with these concerts where people are using them already. So that's
terrific.
Exciting.
Hope you'll come back on the Nonprofit Coach when that's ready to launch to give us the good news of the new mobile services that are coming along with the other changes that you have over at Just Give.
Terrific. Well, thanks, Ted, for having us on.
Kendall, thank you. This is Kendall Webb, President and CEO of JustGive.org. The link is available over in the radio links today. Again, Kendall, look forward to having you back here on the show, and good luck with all the changes over at Just Give. Next up here on Page One News here on the Nonprofit Coach is just a programming note, and that is many of our listeners are aware of the fact that we also have a monthly magazine called The Green Show. Well, The Green Show for September has actually been rescheduled, just mark your calendar, for October 7. This is Friday, October 7, will be the next Green Show at 1 p.m. You'll find that at tedhart.com. Click on radio links and you'll find the entire schedule there. And the topic there, we're very, very excited. Dana Goldstein, who is the founder of Philantech, will be speaking about green grants, how your organization can go green and find the money to afford to do that as well. So that will be the next Green Show here on the Nonprofit Coach. Now, we've got a lot of exciting things coming up here at tedhart.com. And one of those exciting things, we're always very pleased each month to host the AFP Wiley radio program. That's always the third week of each month, so watch the programming calendar. Next week will be the AFP Wiley radio show, where we highlight those authors who are in the AFP book series with John Wiley and Sons. Well, we also participate and are very happy to be part of the webinar series that the AFP hosts. The next webinar that I will be participating in has the topic of nonprofit internet management strategies, tools, and trade secrets. The link is available over in the radio links at tedhart.com, and that date is September 28th. We've got here on the show today, I believe, Chris Griffin is with us from AFP. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Ted. Thanks for having us.
Great to have you here on the show. Now, let's start off with, tell me, what is the AFP webinar series? What is the benefit of the overall series to the marketplace?
We offer their hour-and-a-half webinars. They're scheduled around lunchtime for East Coast folks. And they, besides having experts like yourself, present on varying topics. We also offer, for those people who are looking for CFRE credit, they're all worth 1.5 CFRE continuing education credits. And like I said, as well as, you know, there's topics, everything from your social media and online to planned giving to major gifts to volunteers. All aspects.
You cover a lot of different topics for nonprofit executives, and the benefit of this webinar series is that literally it can be accessed from anywhere. Now, this next program that I'm doing for you, why don't you, we do have a link in the radio links today, so anyone who's interested in getting information and signing up for this webinar can do that at tedhart.com. Click on radio links, but why don't you go over the date and time and details of how people can get involved with this particular webinar scheduled for September 28th called Nonprofit Internet Management Strategies.
Sure. Well, if they follow the link, they can go to order it, and it's Wednesday, September 28th at 1 p.m. Eastern. It'll also be available after the live event. It will be available as a download starting the next day.
Okay. So anyone who finds September 28th at 1 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific to not be a particularly convenient time, they can also follow the link to be able to purchase the webinar and receive the materials after the webinar as well.
Correct.
That's great. Well, wonderful series. We're very pleased to be part of this. Certainly, we encourage our listeners to consider purchasing the webinar from AFP as an opportunity to dig a little bit deeper and have a good hour. This is an hour and a half. Is that correct? Yeah, an hour and 30 minutes.
Yeah.
A lecture time with me. It's fast-paced, lots of information, and built on practical advice that you can use to succeed online. Chris Griffin from AFP, thank you for joining us here on the Nonprofit Coach today.
Thank you, Ted.
Great. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, still here on page one news, I do want to draw your attention to a very important white paper which has been released from Blackbaud, and that is the Nonprofit Social Media Primer. This is a very important document, I believe, that is being released, and this is being released in advance of the Blackbaud Conference, which is coming up, and I'm very excited to bring here on the Nonprofit Coach to have Ryan Klushkoff here with us representing Blackbaud to talk about something very creative, Ryan, that we've come up with that's going to be taking place in October. Ryan, welcome here to the Nonprofit Coach.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Ted. It's a pleasure to be on. We're big fans of the Nonprofit Coach here at Blackbaud.
Well, thank you so much. Well, it's great to have you here, the creative minds at Blackbaud, working with the folks here at TedHart.com and the Nonprofit Coach Radio Show, have come up with something we've never done before, and I'm pleased to, with you, make an announcement today that we're going to, with Blackbaud, be hosting the very first ever 90-minute Nonprofit Coach Radio Show, regularly scheduled time. This is going to be Tuesday, October 4th at 12 noon Eastern, but this is going to be done in a very different way. Ryan, you want to tell our listening audience today a little bit about what's going to be swirling around the Nonprofit Coach on October 4th?
Sure. Well, Blackbaud is holding its annual conference for nonprofits from October 3rd to October 5th in Washington, D.C. At the Gaylord National Harbor Hotel. It's our 12th annual conference, and this year we'll be celebrating Blackbaud's 30th year in business servicing the nonprofit industry. And this year we are very pleased to have yourself, Ted Hart, and the Nonprofit Coach presenting a live radio show, live from the marketplace at BBCon, which is the hashtag for the Blackbaud Conference for Nonprofits.
This is really going to be quite exciting, and I really appreciate the creative minds at Blackbaud who worked with us to create this sort of centerpiece opportunity. So this, again, for our listening audience, mark your calendars. Tuesday, October 4th at 12 noon Eastern will be the first ever 90-minute Nonprofit Coach Radio Show coming to you live from the Blackbaud Conference. And we're going to have a number of guests. Now, we typically, as we do today, have a expert for the call-in show. But we're going to have several folks coming over to the radio booth at Blackbaud. For the purpose of getting a chance to chat with people and to talk about the important work that's being done. But this is also a very special conference for Blackbaud. You're celebrating an important anniversary along with this, are you not?
We are. We are celebrating 30 years in business of servicing the nonprofit industry. We're very excited. Last year we had over 2,200 attendees attending the conference. We are confident that we are going to eclipse that number again this year. We have over 190 educational sessions that attendees can qualify for CFRE and CPE credits and learn all about important topics that help nonprofits achieve their mission, topics like organizational impact, interactive and direct marketing, fundraising, CRM, analytics, financial management, and how to raise more money.
Well, those are all very important topics, and I will also, for those of you who are considering going to BBCon, I certainly encourage you to do that, and I will also be speaking at the Blackbaud Conference this year in addition to hosting the special 90-minute Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart live from BBCon. Ryan, thank you again for all of your support. Thank you for the creativity of Blackbaud. We certainly look forward to working with you at the Blackbaud Conference. And as I was sharing with my listeners before you came on board here, we also have a very important link in the radio links today to your nonprofit social media primer that comes from your director of professional services. So in addition to the conference and the radio show, Blackbaud continues to be a thought leader in providing education in addition to software solutions.
Well, thank you very much, Ted. We believe in giving back as well, and I should point out one other thing that we are doing at BBCon. This year, we will be donating 25 cents for each tweet with the BBCon hashtag, $1 for each new like on Blackbaud's Facebook page and $1 for each new, for each 2011 BBCon Foursquare check-in to a nonprofit focusing on health and wellness as a result of the conference. We believe
That's great. Well, make sure that we get the press release on that. We want to make sure that we remind people in advance of BBCon that you have that generous philanthropic outreach as well. Ryan Klischkoff from Blackbaud, thank you again for joining us here live on the Nonprofit Coach.
Thank you, Ted. It's always our pleasure.
You bet. All right, back here, we have a very long page one today, and I'm very eager to get to our outstanding page two expert today. So I'm going to share with you just a couple of other links that you will find over in the radio links today coming to us from the Chronicle of Philanthropy. An environmental nonprofit has seized the opportunity to change their thank you letters and to make a big difference in their donor emotional ties to their organization. Read all about that in the radio links today. Also, one of the listeners of the show shared a really terrific 9/11 remembrance 10 years later, and we're sharing that over in the radio links as well. It's entitled Tonight Our Eagle Cries. It's quite well done. I also will draw attention in the archives of the P2P fundraising newsletter. Those of you who are listening and receive that newsletter did receive our remembrance over the weekend on September 11. We actually posted some screenshots from 2001 about fundraising, a time that really changed the use of the internet by nonprofit organizations, and also an article that I posted in October of 2001 in remembrance of those who lost their lives and the change that was coming to America. And this was just a way to remember back. And it was uncanny as I read through that article how similar the economic situation that we found ourselves in the nonprofit sector 10 years ago and how that really compared to the nonprofit sector that we all face here in the United States and around the world today. So with that, it is my pleasure to now go straight on to page two. It is such a pleasure to have the opportunity to welcome yet another really top expert in our field here to the Nonprofit Coach. Every single time we have a show, we've got someone even more illustrious than the last. But today, we have really a unique opportunity to welcome Gail Perry to our show. She is the best-selling author of Fired Up Fundraising, Turning Board Passion into Action. Her Fired Up Fundraising approach, developed over 22 years as a nonprofit philanthropy expert, has helped organizations large and small raise literally hundreds of millions of dollars in gifts and support. Gail brings fundraising ideas alive by leading attendees inspired, energized, and excited about what they can accomplish. It really is transformational for a lot of people who attend her lectures, but I'm very pleased that we have today here live on the Nonprofit Coach, Gail Perry. Gail, welcome here to the Nonprofit Coach.
How you doing, Ted? Glad to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here on the show. Apologies for an overabundance of page one news. I find that tends to happen when we come back from our summer hiatus, that we have a lot of things that we want to get caught up on. But I don't want to waste any time in getting into this really very important book for nonprofit organizations who often do struggle with working with their boards of directors. You've authored this book, Fired Up Fundraising. Tell me, what is Fired Up Fundraising?
Well, Fired Up Fundraising is really a different kind of approach dealing with fundraising and dealing with boards. I find that boards are scared to death of fundraising. I'm sure you've worked with a few of those folks, and you've got to make it fun. You've got to make it easy for them. And most importantly, you've got to take the emphasis away from soliciting and putting it back on relationship development. I know you talk a lot about that yourself.
And that really does make a difference in sort of changing the dialogue with your board members. But why is that important? What is it about board members coming to fundraising that tends to be a bit scary?
Well, see, they, bless their hearts, they're well-meaning, they're wonderful folks, but they're not the professionals that we are. And I don't know why we think that we can just automatically expect them to go out and be successful raising money. I think that's a real myth that that fundraisers have. And actually, board members have another myth about fundraising. And their myth is that fundraising equals, get this, asking strangers for money. You know, if you mention fundraising to a board member, they're going to be like the deer in headlights, and they're going to go, oh, my God, rejection, money.
And isn't that really sort of the heart of it is, you know, we inspire to have these high-powered, very well-connected board members who are all very successful in their individual lives and have no interest in coming to a charity and finding failure. And in their minds, one of the surest ways to fail is to be involved with fundraising.
That's very true. And, again, we're dealing with such misconceptions on both the part of board members and fundraisers that it's amazing that we're all getting along as well as we are. And I'll tell you something
else.
So
in your book, you talk about inspiring board members with a new philosophy of fundraising. What is the philosophy of fundraising, and why does that make a difference?
Well, the new philosophy of fundraising is that that soliciting is not the most important thing about fundraising. It is a complete loving your donors. I mean, I like friend. Right, I talk more about friend making than I do fundraising. And board members are like, oh, really? You mean we really want to raise friends from our organization, and it doesn't matter whether or not they give to us? Well, I can do that. I can have porch parties, and I can toast tours if I'm not all about the money. So it's taking the emphasis away from money, away from the sense of a transaction, and putting it much more in the glorious, wonderful sense of changing the world for our mission, standing up high on the hill, shining with purpose and enthusiasm. You know, it's how you are being as well as what you're saying. So fired up fundraising is a way of
being. And it allows our board members... Gail, it allows our board members to be human, right? To not feel it's just about the money, but instead to put the emphasis on relationship building, which most of our board members, if they've been successful, they get that.
Yeah, they really do. But you have to. I think it's very important for staff to make it easy for board members to set up relationships. You've got to give them a path and a purpose and a format and a structure. For example, if you decide that you want board members to host tours of your organization, you've got to be very systematic about it. You tell your board members, okay, we're doing a tour at 11:30 every Wednesday morning, and which month do you want to sign up for? You get to host.
Right, right. So you're organizing the process and making it possible for them to succeed.
Absolutely. And there was an organization in Raleigh, I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina, Interact, the local rape crisis center, and a new CEO came aboard and discovered that he only had 400 people on his mailing list. And he said, how am I going to raise money with this? So the board, in their wisdom, established a friend-raising committee. And they competed with each other to see who could have the best friend-raiser in town. And the only rule was that each group of board members who staged an event, a friend-raising event, it couldn't cost the organization a cent. And I think the most successful one was in a parking lot with a donated band and barbecue. But it was a huge PR opportunity for this organization, and it really launched them into a very successful capital campaign a few years later. And so
because they put the emphasis on those relationships.
I do a lot of board retreats around the country, and one of the things I've been working with boards lately on is the whole idea of, I'm sure you'll appreciate this, raising more money from your current donors, because we all know in this economy, and I think there's a new report out just last week that said that people are far more unlikely to give to a new organization now than they were in the past. So if you're going to be making your year-end fundraising goals, you've got to be focusing on your current donors and also your last donors.
Oh, the organization has been spending, you know, weeks, months, years in building those relationships. Maybe it is to put the emphasis there.
Yeah, and I'll tell board members, the statistics I think in for-profit companies are that it costs about 10 times more to find a new customer for your business than it does to get more business out of a current customer or to renew
right,
a relationship.
And so maybe it's time for the nonprofit sector to start realizing that's probably true in our sector as well.
Yeah, I think so, and it's a whole lot easier because if somebody's given you a gift and they've lapsed, that means that they have at one point believed in your mission.
Right.
So going back to my board retreat, I was working with the Corpus Christi Symphony in Texas, and 2 weeks after the retreat, the board members independently organized a phone-a-thon committee to call lapsed donors and tell them, we love you, we miss you, and we want you back. And you'd better believe that that's going to directly impact the bottom line for the symphony.
Well, and it also gives board members a direct opportunity to hear from the people who fund their organization.
Yeah. I mean, the phone calling for board members is just a no-brainer. It's always a home run. Board members love it. Donors love it. And I'm sure you're familiar with the statistics that show that many times if a board member makes a quick follow-up thank you phone call, the donor's gifts rise by as much as one-third, increased by 39%.
And again, that's because of relationship building.
Yeah, and it also is undisputable, factual, documentary, data-driven proof that a board member can directly impact the bottom line without having to ask for money, just by making the follow-up phone call and saying thank you. So what I do with boards is that I show them that there are many ways for them to be very effective in fundraising and to help their organizations without having to do the asking. I mean, if you can do the ask, we want you to do the ask. But otherwise, there's a lot of other stuff you can do.
And
for
can
example,
really affect the bottom line as
yeah.
well. Gail, we just have a little bit of a reminder that we want to get out to all of our listeners, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
Remember, our podcasts and archives are always available 24 hours a day at tedhart.com. Click on radio links. If you're listening live today, the phone lines are open. Call in and ask a question by dialing 347-324-3080. Now, back to the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart.
Yeah, we're back, and I want to remind all of our listeners that they can call in, as the announcer just reminded them, at 347-324-3080. You can also join us in the chat room, and we do have a number of people in the chat room. You can ask questions there in the chat room. You can also email us at tedhart@tedhart.com. Now, Gail, I just wanted to take a little bit of a departure from your wonderful book and draw attention to the GailPerry.com blog that you have, Fired Up Fundraising blog, because
yeah.
in the radio links today, in addition to having you here as our guest, we have your top 10 things donors want from your nonprofit website. And
yeah.
I just couldn't miss the opportunity, having you here live on the show, to ask you to share with our listeners, as we're looking at year-end here, what are the strategies that are most important for nonprofit websites from a donor's perspective?
Absolutely. Great question. And before I tackle a question, let me remind everybody listening that I've got a wealth of resources on the blog. I publish a very thoughtful analytical article every week in my newsletter. And one thing that your listeners may be really interested in, I just posted a free workbook, 24-page workbook, called Recruiting Your Dream Team Board. So it gives you a format and a structure for going after the best people you could possibly have on your board. So all that's on the site. So let's talk about websites, because I know you're Mr. Internet and you're a leader in the field. You could probably answer this question for me. But so many organizations look at, the website is almost a political issue. You know, everybody's got to have their thing on the website. And
yep.
Multiple people are making decisions. And nobody will ever agree that what the purpose of the website really is. People think it's a brochure. And I think and the most deadly websites we've ever seen are the ones with the brochure. So what does
right, and that's where you know we always take the conversation in the direction of understanding the difference between Web 1.0 and Web 2.0. And a lot of nonprofit charity thinking is still stuck in Web 1.0, where we're posting things for people to read, but we're not thinking about the interactive web or why people are and what information that they're looking for. So that's really sort of the turning point is to get charities to understand that there's a whole different dialogue that's expected. The other thing that listeners here know, and those who attend my lectures are always fairly well shocked, is that a vast minority of people who come to the average charity website actually come to the homepage first. So the whole talking about the turf wars on the homepage, for most charities is really for naught, because that's not where the action is at. It's because most people are identifying and finding content on charity websites via search engines.
Well, I am really big for the call to action. And I ask my clients and all my friends, I say, what is your call to action on your website? What is the call to action on your homepage? What is the call to action on your donation page? Make it clear. And everybody goes, oh, wow, gosh, I need to think about that. Every board retreat I do, every speech I do, I'm sure you're the same way. There's a call to action because people want to do something, but you have to direct them. So the most important thing, I think, for a nonprofit website is to make it easy to donate. Make it easy. And I recommend all of my friends and clients and colleagues to go in and make a $5 donation and see what the process looks like, you know, and how does it feel and how long does it take.
And that's very good advice, particularly for smaller nonprofits that perhaps can't afford to hire a consultant. One of the great ways for you to monitor what others are doing is to go and make a small contribution to each of the organizations whose websites you really admire. And to monitor over time, how are they communicating with you? What are the tools and techniques? And to start emulating some of those things that you think really work well that ought to have a place in the strategy for your organization.
Great tip. Great tip. And I think, too, that web donation pages can be very laborious, and it's easy to drive donors away by asking for too much information. I remember I was registering for a conference in Charleston, South Carolina, and here I'm in North Carolina, and I put down all my information, my credit card number and everything, and it rejected it because I didn't have the country. I didn't have USA. So I went back through the entire process again. I'm getting impatient. And don't you know it rejected me again because there was some other weird little thing I didn't have. And I almost left. I almost left. And I'm sure that donors, it would be interesting to try to track the abandon rate of your donation form. Do you know what those statistics are, Ted? I'd love to know the latest tracking data on how often donation forms are abandoned out of frustration.
Yeah, and it is very high. And one of the ways for charities to get a handle on that for themselves is to be using services like Google Analytics, where they should be tracking the traffic through their website and identifying what are those processes that are working and what are those processes that are not. I mean, how many people are clicking on your Donate Now button and never making a gift?
It could very well be
because there is a problem with the way that you're managing your online services.
Absolutely. And another thing I think is really important on a website is a little page or a little chart that says your gifts at work. Your gifts at work with a pie chart about where the money comes in and comes from and then where it goes out. I'm sure you and I follow the same reports that donors in this current recession are much less trusting of nonprofits. They're looking carefully at the data of how their money is being used. They want assurance that the nonprofit's well run and the overhead costs are not high. And so your gifts at work right out there in front of everybody is so very important. And I would even put it right on the donation page.
It really is important, and I've been talking about that for years in understanding the power of the internet to really bring stewardship alive in a way that really only talked about it in the nonprofit sector but not really met that criteria. Yeah, we're going to take a little bit of a break, but when we come back from the break, I really was hoping that you would share. You've got so many great tips in this very, very important book, Fired Up Fundraising, Turn Board Passion into Action. But one area of it that you have is something called the advice visit, searching for hidden gold. And this is something I really, really believe in, and I want to ask you to share that with our listeners when we come back from this break.
Yeah, sure.
We'll be right back. We want to take an opportunity here to thank the sponsor of today's Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart radio show, and that is Blackbaud. Blackbaud is asking the question, do you want to raise more money? Well, if you do want to raise more money, Blackbaud can help. Blackbaud is one solution from the world's leading provider of fundraising and CRM software for nonprofit organizations. With Blackbaud, you can raise more money both online and offline with the help of their built-in fundraising best practices. But they've also got something new called the Giving Score, which allows you to focus on your very best donors with Blackbaud's new innovations. As Gail Perry here on the show just shared with you, one of the strategies in this post-Great Recession nonprofit sector that we are all trying to raise money in is to focus on your current donors. What are your best donors? And that giving score from Blackbaud may be a big help in identifying that hidden gold. You can connect with your supporters with integrated e-marketing and social media tools. All of this is available at Blackbaud. Check it out today at blackbaud.com. Now, back to the show. Gail, I've always said you're such a smart person, but one of the smartest things in this book is your suggestion that nonprofits start integrating into their overall fundraising strategy this thing that you call advice visits. What are they?
Oh, yeah. Well, an advice visit is when you are doing a reconnaissance visit with a potential donor or friend or supporter. And, for example, I have this philanthropist in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I will call him up and I'll say, hey, Frank, I've got a new project up my sleeve. Can I come pick your brain? And, of course, he's thrilled to come for me to come talk because he knows that he gets to do the talking. I'm really big on listening your way to the gift, as we all know. And an advice visit is a low-pressure.
Let me stop right there because that is pure gold, what you just said there.
listening
is the way to the gift. Say that again and help us understand because I'm not sure that people really, because we're not all good listeners, I'm not sure that everybody say that, and that's so important.
Yeah, I have a couple of recent posts on listening that your people may enjoy reading on my website. But the whole thing is if you're doing more than 50% of the talking, you're dead. And the kiss of death to a fundraiser is to be boring. And the easiest way to be boring is to talk too much. I mean, you do not want the person you're visiting with to wish you would leave now, do you? And I think Maya Angelou said something really wonderful that I always share with my audiences. She said, when you're gone, they don't remember what you said. They don't remember what you did, but they remember how you made them feel, right? So you want to make the donor do the talking so that they will feel happy with you and that they will want to see you again. One of the top fundraisers at UNC Chapel Hill in the University of North Carolina, and I would call on this Wall Street hedge fund guy who was this really huge, important dude. And I was the only fundraiser from Carolina he would ever see because I knew that I needed to get out of his office after 13 and a half minutes before he lost interest, and I would never wear out my welcome. So when I went in to see Mr. Wall Street, I had him do the talking. And through that –
because a lot of fundraisers, and maybe it's nerves or maybe it's being mature enough and take the opposite approach in that they're really trying to talk people into giving And the point that you just made is such a very, very important point, and that is actually listening your way into the gift.
Yeah, and when I'm training board members on how to find prospects and make friends, the first thing I do with them is teach them an elevator speech process that has them only speak for 30 seconds, and then they invite the other person to give their opinion. My current blog post up on my site, GailPerry.com, is the how to make your ask when you're asking for a gift irresistible to a donor. And one of those things is that listening and taking the cue from the donor. The donor will tell you what his hot buttons are. The donor will tell you what she wants to do, and they will practically talk themselves into the gift. But the advice visit, going back to the advice visit, is really fun. And board members like this idea a lot because they know that they don't have to have a fancy presentation. I think board members in particular and fundraisers, too, think they've got to have a presentation that will, like, bowl over somebody, you know, like sales. And then the advice visit is low pressure because you don't really have to have a slick presentation. You want the donor to ask you questions about your plan. You want him even to take pot shots at your proposal and your plan that you're bouncing off him because that means he's interested. And we always
Go ahead.
We say that involvement leads to investment. And so the advice visit is the first step to getting the donor involved with your cause.
Giving them an opportunity to talk about what's important to them. Gail, mm-hmm. I think you have a lot of fans everywhere, but I think you have a fan in Dallas. Susan is writing, and I'm thinking she must have your book because she's asking you specifically, what are follow-up cards?
Follow-up cards are a wonderful tool for any event, for any tour. Lots of times organizations will kill themselves to have every important person in town at an event, but there's never any follow-up. So a follow-up card is a little cute little card that you ask people to fill out with their name and their address and their contact information and their email. They can choose to give this to you or not. So they self-select whether they want to hear from the organization. And also it should have some boxes that say, I would like to make a gift. I have an idea I'd like to discuss with you. Please call on me. I would like to join your newsletter. I would like to volunteer. I would like to host a social event like this for this cause myself. Whatever fits with your organization, let the donors and the prospects choose how they want to be dealt with by the organization, and you get that fabulous piece of data called the email address, which makes the donor's contact information infinitely more valuable to you. And there's a sample
A lot of what you're talking about is sort of taking people in a bit of a different direction. You keep talking about listening. You keep talking about people identifying how they would like to be contacted. You're talking about a very different mode of communication than a lot of organizations who I think kind of get nervous when they're opening themselves up to other people directing as opposed to themselves directing everything.
Yeah, well, I call it the Southern School of Fundraising, you know, good manners, white gloves and pearls school of fundraising. I'm wearing my pearls today up in Connecticut. But the thing is that good manners works. And being pushy, I do not believe in arm twisting. I don't believe in being pushy. You know, I think if somebody does not want to hear my wonderful news about my cause, there are plenty of other people who do. So I bless and release the people who are not interested. And I'll tell you something else, Ted. My number one motto in fundraising is when in doubt, throw a party. And what I mean by that...
Tell us more about that, because, you know, throwing a party sounds expensive, sounds like a lot of work, and what's the payoff going to be? And that's the CEO asking those questions.
Yeah, well, no, here's the thinking. Make it fun. Make it fun for everybody. Be a fun person to be around. Make your board meetings into a party. Make your donor visits into a party. Make your event into a party. I mean, celebrate the work you're doing. And my thinking is that if you are having a good time, people will want to be, they will be attracted to your cause. There's nothing that says that nonprofit work, charity work, has got to be dreary and sad. Volunteers these days have got a lot of places they can spend their time and attention, and they want to enjoy themselves. So,
and
I
that's
think
often
that we
the best way to
fun.
Lose your really good board members is by really making service on your board a drudgery.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, step one in Fired Up Fundraising is liven up your board. So your board's got to be happy. They got to be excited. They got to enjoy being a board member before you ever raise the F word to them.
Of course, you mean by the F word meaning?
Fundraising.
Right.
That's what.
Just want to make sure that for anybody that just tuned in, what might have meant there.
Yeah, well, that's what board members say. They think it's the F word. But you can see that when my approach to fundraising is deliberately lighter, and when I'm working with a board or speaking to board members, I'm using stories, I'm making jokes, I'm making it fun. I'm modeling the kind of energy that they need to have when they're representing their organization out in the community. They got to be on fire, enthusiastic, they got to be fired up. And if they're nervous about the money part of fundraising, they're going to be, their energy is going to shrink and be cold and clammy, and nobody's going to want to be with them. You know,
David in Newark is sending in an email question asking, what is a governance committee and how is that different from a nominating committee?
All right. Well, a governance committee is a nominating committee grown up. And I think every organization needs a strong governance committee. And actually, there's a list of 14 jobs of a governance committee on my site at gailcurry.com. You can search for governance committee in the search box on the right-hand side. But governance committee does the nominating, but they're in action all year long to be looking at, to be vetting new candidates, to be developing new board candidates, so that you're not having this last-minute push to try to find somebody to get on the board, and you end up with somebody who's not really what you want, or you're somebody's best friend. And the best friend may be great, but they may not be great. The other jobs a board governance committee does, they look out for the care and feeding of the board itself. Are people engaged? Is there a disruption that has to be dealt with? What are term limits working? Do we need to look at our bylaws? How are board meetings working or not working for board members? You know, I'm chair of a board governance committee for a board in North Carolina, and I'm in charge of the evaluation for every board meeting. And right now we're considering a possible change, and I've asked everybody to email me their comments so that we can deal with it. Something else that a board governance committee does is that they should be responsible for an annual board self-assessment. And I love board self-assessment.
A little bit more about that, because I think most board members and volunteers are very, very tuned into evaluating the CEO or the executive director.
Oh, yeah.
But what about board evaluations?
Funny about that, isn't it, Ted? But board self-assessment, there are two kinds, well, two parts to it. One is board members look at themselves and their own performance on the board, and then the board as a whole gets to look at its performance. I mean, does the board even have goals for itself? Do the individual board members even have goals themselves? You know, that's something I work a lot with boards, is to help these goals get set. And I really like a board self-assessment, because if there's something going on with the organization or the board that is difficult to talk about or is sensitive, and the staff doesn't want to bring it up because you don't kill the messenger or something. But if the board members speak privately and anonymously in a board self-assessment about a certain issue, then a facilitator or staff can come back and say, okay, well, it looks like y'all are interested in these three things, and so let's set up task forces to discuss these things, and you can come back with some recommendations. You know, you can take an emotional hot topic and make it diffuse the situation, put it on the table for discussion.
What are some of the things that charities might not think about that would need to be in a board self-assessment? What are some of the less obvious points for board review?
I don't think boards set goals for themselves very often. You know, they sort of have these sort of lame job descriptions for board members that say, my job as a board member is to support the mission and to attend meetings and serve on one committee and be an advocate in the community, blah, blah. You know, nothing specific. I mean, I like that stuff. I think that's fine. That's sort of pro forma. But then as a board member, I'm going to do these specific things. I'm going to attend 2 out of 3 major events. I'm going to be responsible for bringing in, for hosting a tour or hosting a porch party to make new friends. I'm going to make X number of follow-up calls. Very specific jobs that fit in with the organization's fundraising program. I mean,
drawing from your board self-assessment, which I think is brilliant, do you also suggest an individualized board work plan for the year?
Well, you know, I think it depends on the board and the organization and the culture and the history. You have to meet people where they are, and if you take them too fast, they'll resist you.
Right.
A board governance committee could propose to the rest of the board members, hey, you know, we're thinking about doing this individual board plan. What do y'all think? Are y'all willing to do this?
Right.
That way,
so it's a step-by-step process to introduce these new ideas. How long does it take from, you know, where an average board might be today to having some of these efficient and really effective tools in place?
Well, you know, that, again, depends on the people. You know, I've written a lot about boards gone wrong, boards gone wild. And if you've got a culture that doesn't have term limits and is not interested in being high-performing, if you've got more of a social club or a group of martyrs or people who say, we own this organization, they are going to resist change like crazy. And I think that's really sad. And when you have a board that treats itself like they own the organization or they resist change, your organization's in trouble. One of my favorite
quotes. And sometimes it is news to boards of directors that they actually do set policy and that they do oversee the overall organization. I once had an organization whose executive director had convinced them that the board did not have the authority to fire him.
That's interesting.
Which, on one hand, some people might think, gee, that's brilliant. How do I do that? But it's indicative of just how far the board had stepped away from its duties.
Yeah. Well, you know, board training is so important. But the problem is that most of the board training out there is incredibly dull. I mean, I think the whole governance field is full of these experts who do nothing but blather, and that's fine. But if you're going to get a bunch of important people in a room together, you've got to give them something worth listening to and something that they feel like their time is well invested. I mean, just providing board training to them and making them sit through it could be very deadly.
Yeah, it really can.
Like,
and I'm so glad that you said that, because I think it has to be within context for it to really sink in for board members, because unfortunately for every organization that's listening today, the good board members will leave first, and the ones who will be left behind will not be the highly functioning board members if you don't take Gail Perry's suggestions today to heart. Gail, I want to thank you so much for your time here today. I want to remind our listeners that we will be back next week on Tuesday, September 20th at 12 noon Eastern. That will be for the very special AFP Wiley radio show here on the Nonprofit Coach. Our guest will be Tom Wilson, who is an author and fundraising consultant, and his book is part of the AFP Wiley series, as yours is, and is entitled Winning Gifts. And, of course, in this market, we need that. I'm very excited to share with our listeners that today I will be heading to Amsterdam and lecturing there for a group on Thursday. And then next week's show will be coming to you live from Madrid, Spain, as part of their annual conference of fundraisers in Madrid. We will be hosting the AFP Wiley radio show from Europe next week. Gail, thank you so much for your time here on the show. Let's just wrap up real quick by making sure that everybody knows how they can reach Gail Perry.
Yeah, it's GailPerry.com, G-A-I-L-P-E-R-R-Y, and my Twitter handle, I'm very active on Twitter, as you know, is at GailPerryNC. I've got my Fired Up Fundraising Facebook page, and I really do respond to emails. And so you can either you can send me a question by way of my website or on Facebook, and I'll respond. But I'd love to hear from you.
That's great. And everybody, of course, make sure that you go to Amazon.com today, get yourself a copy of Fired Up Fundraising. Gail, you have shared some invaluable tips today that really can be very transformational for every single nonprofit executive listening today. Join us back here on the Nonprofit Coach 1 week from today. Live Madrid, thank you. That is the show for today. Thank you, everyone, for joining us here on the Nonprofit Coach.
You've been listening to the Nonprofit Coach Radio Show with Ted Hart. Tell all your friends to check out our production schedule and download our iPod and iPad-friendly podcast at tedhart.com. Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Coach.